Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, Benjamin Barber, for those of you interested, is going to be on the Colbert Report tomorrow. Thought you might like to know after listening to him. I don't know if they're listening out there in Colbert Nation. Maybe they will bring up the iPhone issue. Who knows? But where have we been today? Through more details of the Sean Bell case, Anne Lamott's search for grace eventually, and Benjamin Barber there on how consumerism defeats democracy. And we'll finish up today with a call-in to launch a new series we're beginning called True or Urban Legend. Is there something you hear the news media say that makes you wonder, is that true or is that an urban legend? Email us and we will research it for you and find out. Send us your research requests anytime for True or Urban Legend. Put the words True or Urban Legend in the subject line. But to kick this off, we thought we'd begin with a call-in for today. Urban legends you would like to bust wide open or have us look into for you. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Here's an example, and you can call on the content of this one if you like, but I raise it mostly as an example. One of our listeners emailed us about a debate he had with his cousin over political email petitions. The cousin claimed email petitions were useless and are never taken seriously by politicians. The listener likes to sign email petitions and pass them on. It makes him feel like he's participating in our democracy, tell Benjamin Barber. Well, sure enough, this listener, having an open mind, did some online research for himself and came to the conclusion that he was wrong and his cousin was right. He concluded that email petitions are useless. He concluded this by going to some fact-checking and myth-busting websites, for example, KnowledgeHound.com, did the math, and showed how the same email petition winds up with thousands of different versions as you send them out to your contacts list. Think about it. There's no one version of the petition that has the same signatures on it or can't prevent overlapping signatures, making it meaningless as a tool of persuasion by showing the number of signatures. Another myth-busting site, Snopes.com, that's a great one, dismissed email petitions as a form of slacktivism. Activism for slackers, nothing active required. And among other things, this is a long entry on Snopes, but it says, I'll read a little bit of this, often petitions contain no information about whom they are ultimately intended for and instead are no more than outpourings of outrage. Expressions of outrage are fine and good, but if they don't reach someone who can have an impact on the core problem, they're a waste. Thus, a petition that doesn't clearly identify the intended recipient may have some value as a way to signers for its signers to work off angst, but as an instrument of social change, it fails miserably. And then it goes on to say many of these sites that are becoming very popular with e-petitions display banner ads that generate revenues for the site's operators when someone visits to view or sign a petition, giving the site's owners revenue. So then there are all these ulterior motives for starting these petitions in the first place. But those are just some examples from one topic. You can call in about email petitions if you want and react to that, or call in and bust your own urban legends, or just suggest ones that you've heard that you've wondered if they're urban legends, things the media tends to say that you wonder, is that really true? Is that an urban legend? And we'll check them out for you. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Jim in Ocean, you're on W, not in the ocean, you're in Ocean, New Jersey, right?
Yes. Hi. Thank you, Brian.
Hi, Jim.
It's interesting you bring this up. I was just having a debate with my sisters and my wife yesterday on this. My father was just moved from a hospital where he was in intensive care for over a week, and he was moved into a residential rehab where, as I noted, I didn't see a piece of actual medical equipment, monitoring equipment, electronics equipment, anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there are signs all over this place that say no cell phones anywhere, no cell phones, no cell phones. And they look to be ancient signs. The pictures of cell phones on them are these, you know, gigantic things from 1987.
So your question is, do modern cell phones, we'll take the iPhone as just one random example, actually interfere with medical equipment?
Right. And we were allowed to use our cell phones in the intensive care unit of a hospital, and yet we're supposed to defer to some 15-year-old sign in a residential rehab. I guess the idea is that we're supposed to be interfering with somebody's pacemaker. But that was it. And then as a corollary, do they actually interfere with anything on airline navigation systems?
Mm-hmm.
We've always been told that they did, but, you know, of course, since 9/11, people have felt a little bit emboldened to use their cell phone. I don't necessarily think it's a good idea.
Right.
But more, honestly, for politeness reasons, yes, than the idea that the plane is going to...
In fact, I was just on a plane recently with my kids, and when they announced this, you know, before the plane was ready to take off, they put it in very general terms. They said, please now suspend your use of electronic devices. And
right,
my kids weren't sure whether they needed to turn off their Game Boys, which they were using to pass the time sitting on the runway. I had been
told years ago to turn off a CD Walkman because that was going to interfere with the navigation system. And I complied. I don't want to be arrested,
right,
but I don't believe it. I think some lawyer somewhere made an overly general term rather than, you know, have the flight attendants or whomever have to decide whether this CD player versus that Game Boy versus a whatever, a shortwave radio,
right,
was an electronic device. But
now I'm going to get all these emails from people saying, I'm a bad parent, I should have been making them read on the, what is this, letting my kids use the Game Boys, I'm a public radio host. Okay, Jim, thank you for your call. We're going to try to get you an answer.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kevin, in Long Valley, you're on WNYC. Hello,
hey,
Kevin.
Good morning. How are you doing? It's my understanding that the vice president is exempt from term limits.
Ooh,
that's a scary thought.
A scary thought for you. I don't think you have to worry about it in this present case. Who would pick Cheney as a running mate right now?
I don't know, man. Maybe I'm watching 24 too much. But if he's the power behind the throne,
who's really in charge?
Lobby going.
All right, we'll try to get you an answer to that too. I should know this one, but I really don't. The president can only serve two terms. Can the vice president serve more than two terms? My producer is hopping over to the talkback microphone to say something in my ear. No? Okay, I thought she knew. Maybe you're going to look it up right now. Joseph in Bethel, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joseph.
Yes, hello.
How are you?
The urban legend, or the international urban legend that I'm curious about, I have some knowledge of it, but is that when people adopt internationally, there are there's a legend in many of the countries that they shouldn't allow children to be adopted out of the country because when they get to the United States, sometimes they are chopped up for human body parts.
My God. So do you think this is an actual impediment to international adoption in particular countries?
Yes. In fact, in Brazil, where they elect judges, the judges had to say that they would not allow international adoptions in their jurisdictions or they would be voted down because of journalists saying this. And recently I talked to somebody who mentioned that they were worried about this in Russia and they wanted to not adopt people outside of Russia. So
your question is, do we in the United States really chop up adopted babies for body parts? Is that it?
Well, I know the answer, but it's actually a real question out there in the international circles, yes.
Right. So you want to make it crystal clear that doesn't... You're just exposing that there's a myth out there around the world.
There's a myth, and it's believed by a lot of people. And it actually affects the ability of people in the United States to adopt children internationally in various countries.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate it a lot. Zen in South Salem, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I just got an email the other day that told a story that back in 1987, Oliver North was being questioned during his hearings by some senators. And apparently he had installed a $60,000 security system, the reason for which that he had been threatened by Osama bin Laden. Later, the story reveals that the senator who was questioning him was Al Gore, and apparently it alludes to the fact that Al Gore had never heard of Osama bin Laden, nor did he accept the validity of the threat that Osama bin Laden could present. And that seemed a little bit unrealistic, given the fact that it was 1987. I thought in around 83 we started funding Osama bin Laden to fight the Russians.
Right. So the question is, would Al Gore have heard of Osama bin Laden by 1987?
Right, and knew what he was all about.
Right.
This tries to promote the idea that Al Gore had no knowledge and he was warned.
Oh, that he was warned. Warned. Right. Okay. 1987, that's a lot different than 1997. What I don't know is how prominent Osama bin Laden was as a figure in Afghanistan, known to the United States at that early date. Yes, we were arming and help funding the Mujahideen that he was involved with, but maybe we can run that down for you. We'll see what we could do. Fran and Katoni, you're on WNYC. Hi, Fran.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm just wondering if this is a true urban legend or not. I hear that if you lock your, say you lock your keys in your car, and you have a, but you have your cell phone, you could call home, and if your spouse or someone at home has access to the other clicker, electronic opener for your car, they could hold it to their phone and click open, and you hold the phone near your car door, and your car door will open.
Miraculously. Have you tried it?
I've tried it from, but I may not have done it right. I wasn't holding it close enough to the device or not, and I'm just curious if anybody out there actually had this work.
Did it have any effect on your pacemaker?
No, not exactly.
We could tie the two of you together.
I don't have one.
That's good. Okay, thank you very much. David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
Ever since I was a kid, I've been going to Chinatown, and I don't know, what this is sort of received knowledge that the bean sprouts used in the Chinese food and Chinese restaurants down there are grown underground in hydroponic farms in Chinatown itself. Now, I have no way of corroborating this or verifying it, but I've sort of known this all my life, and I wonder if there's anyone out there who knows about this.
Oh, that'll be a fun one to run down, the hydroponic bean sprout
farms
in lower Manhattan underground. Now, of course, it is easy enough to grow sprouts. I've done it. I know a family that eats a lot of broccoli sprouts. It's a staple of their diet, and they grow them in their kitchen.
But I'm thinking of the massive quantities of bean sprouts needed to feed all those lawyers and jurors.
Right.
Underground. Well, on a daily basis. So if somebody around knows about this, I'd love to know whether it's true or a legend.
All right, we're developing quite a list here already of things to answer in our new Truth or Urban Legend series. I'm glad you included the jurors, by the way.
I've been one of them myself.
A staple of Chinatown. They're not a staple. That would mean they're serving the jurors, which would go back to that other urban legend. But anyway, yes, glad you included the jurors. Let's see. Andy in Red Bank, you're on WNYC. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
Great show.
Thanks.
Great show in front of a consumer show. But anyway, my question is about consumerism, the bottled water. You remember when it was free? If you drink the bottled water and decide that the second time you'd like to refill it with your own water from the tap, does that leach? I've heard that the constant use of the same bottle plastic will leach into the water.
I have heard that too, and I have no idea whether that's true. So we will look into that. Right.
Okay.
Is that a marketing ploy to get you to throw out the bottle each time after one use? And that means if you drink bottled water, you have to go out and buy another bottle. Or, you know, I mean, my gut would be to think that only if you put, I wouldn't want to put, like, hot water in a water bottle.
No.
But,
Only if I had a stomachache.
And you should wash it because, you know, bacteria can grow in there.
Yes, right. Right.
But it's a good question. I've heard it too, and we're putting it on the list. Russ in Long Island thinks he has an answer regarding the cell phone and interference with medical equipment. Hi, Russ.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Great show.
Thank you.
About a year ago, I own a surface preparation company, so I do media blasting, sandblasting, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And a company brought me some equipment to strip down. The company does the testing for airlines on that equipment,
uh-huh.
specifically for cell phone use on the airplanes and other electronic equipment on the airplanes.
Right.
So I asked the question. The answer that I got was one cell phone will not have any impact on the equipment. But what the concern is that if they don't tell you not to use your cell phone, and you have a plane with 200 people on it,
mm-hmm.
everybody having their cell phone,
chatting away, all these waves.
Right. A large quantity of signals going out from that plane could have an effect on the instrumentation in the plane. So what he said is, no, if you're the guy making the phone call, you're never going to cause a problem. But in the unlikely event that everybody on the plane were making a call, there is the possibility that there could be a problem, so that's why they just blanket it and say nobody can use their cell.
Sounds
phone.
Like it makes sense anyway, and I guess then that wouldn't apply to Walkmans or iPods or Game Boys.
Different equipment, any electronic equipment puts out some kind of signal, so I don't know specifics in terms of radio frequencies and such, but, a PDA might have some kind of wireless output on it or whatever it is. So I think rather than letting the person on the plane make that decision, it's easier for them to blanket it across and say, turn everything off and we'll tell you when you can use and what you can use.
Thanks for your call. I appreciate that a lot. And we'll still try to get further clarification on that. But sounds like it makes sense. Mary in the Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
No, you're Mary.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Brian, thank you for calling.
I'm not sure this is a myth, but I'm curious about there's a policy for cops using their cell phones on the street. I see it quite often, and I'm not sure if they're off duty or if there has been any policy set, because it feels somewhat disconcerting to see someone who's watching you not watching you or watching out for any dangers.
Right. Now, they may be talking to headquarters, they may be talking to the precinct or to other police officers who they're coordinating with.
Right. Sometimes it seems like they're not, though. I'm just curious if there is a policy.
Right. Okay. Thank you for your call. We'll see if we can run that one down. David in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi. Mine is about the common wisdom in the advertising industry that I've heard numerous times, going back probably 25 years, about the big mistake where when they started marketing the Chevrolet Nova in Venezuela under that name, Nova, all of a sudden somebody said, no, this is a terrible name, that in Spanish, Nova means it doesn't go.
Doesn't go. Yeah, I've heard it with respect to Mexico.
Okay, maybe it was Mexico, but I thought it was Venezuela.
But it could be one or the other. It may be, as you suggest, it never happened.
Yeah, my contention is that it probably never happened, that somebody who knew what Nova meant said, made it up and it got started, or that it's just, it's just not true. That
David, we're going to try to find out, but we have to leave it there because we're out of time. So that's a good start to our new occasional series, True or Urban Legend. We will try to find out if the various things that you called and got on the air and asked about are true or urban legends. And we'll get back to you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.